I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. The Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, MALDEF, was founded in San Antonio 50 years ago. The organization was inspired by the African-American legal fight for civil rights, as Mexican-Americans were also having to struggle with voter suppression, subpar education, and segregation in schools and public places. MALDEF is both a law firm and a nonprofit organization known as the Law Firm of the Latino Community, and it doesn't charge client fees. MALDEF's most recent cases have involved representing student dreamers in a lawsuit the state of Texas brought against the federal government challenging the legality of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. MALDEF also is heavily vested in cases involving immigration and redistricting. Nina Perales has been with MALDEF for 22 years. She's vice president of litigation for the organization. She says MALDEF's efforts have led to new laws and policies that widely impact Latinos and the nation as a whole.
The first case that MALDEF brought was right here in Bexar County, Texas, where San Antonio is located. And it was a challenge to the exclusion of Mexican Americans from juries. Mexican-Americans did not serve on juries in San Antonio in 1968, and that was our first case that we brought, and we were successful in integrating Bexar County juries as a result.
So what was the genesis of that particular case? Was it written into county law that there would be no Mexican-Americans on the juries? Were Mexican-Americans called to be jurors and then promptly dismissed if they showed up to the courthouse? Was it one of those types of things?
I can't tell you what the details were of that practice. In the Jim Crow era, there were both formal, as in written into law, exclusions, as well as informal exclusions. So a lot of housing discrimination was both written into deeds in what were known as restrictive covenants, for example, allowing a homeowner to only sell to white individuals. And other practices were more informal. So it really depended on the setting. The genesis for MALDEF's very first case around Mexican Americans serving on juries was because one of our founders, Pete Tijerina, had tried a case a few years earlier on behalf of a woman who had been really seriously injured. She was Mexican American and she had lost a limb. And when Pete Tijerina, as the attorney, went to court to assemble the jury in the lawsuit that she had brought, there were only two Mexican Americans in the pool. One was deceased and thus could not serve, and the other was not a U.S. citizen. And so Pete Tijerina, facing an all-white jury, knew that he wasn't going to be able to get a fair award and settled the case for pennies on the dollar. As a founder of MALDEF, he then focused on jury service, and that's why our first case was challenging the exclusion of Mexican Americans from Bexar County juries.
And it seems like something like this would be a pretty easy constitutional issue to resolve, because a defendant is supposed to be tried before a jury of their peers, but if the jury does not reflect you, then by essence it seems to be unfair.
The question of exclusion of Mexican Americans from juries was not an easy one to answer. Only about 15 years before MALDEF's founding did the U.S. Supreme Court recognize that Mexican Americans were protected by those parts of the Constitution that prohibit race discrimination. And so in a very famous case that was decided before our founding, the Supreme Court declared that Mexican Americans were protected from race discrimination. And MALDEF, after it was founded in 1968, was able to take those rulings and apply them in challenges all around Texas and all around the Southwest to integrate juries, to integrate schools, to integrate restaurants and theaters.
So another case that is very San Antonio, Bexar County centered, is one that occurred at the Edgewood Independent School District. And this was a case that essentially restructured how schools are funded. Can you give us a little bit of background on that particular case, in case maybe some of our listeners might be new to the region and or might not know about the case?
Well, MALDEF has been at the center of a decades-long struggle to equalize school funding across school districts in Texas. And so we litigated what was known as the Edgewood case, and then we have litigated the four cases that came after the original Edgewood case. This issue comes up time and again, and we've been very privileged to be at the center of those cases, seeking a more fair funding system for school districts so that kids across the state are going to get an adequate education regardless of how much value there is in the property of that school district. And so over decades, as a result of these cases, a lot of the funding of school districts has placed less emphasis on the property wealth of the district and has brought more equal funding to students.
It's basically what people call the Robin Hood funding system, where the money from wealthier districts is filtered down to some of the less wealthy districts who might not be able to afford textbooks, teacher pay, etc. And Edgewood was one of those low-income, low-performing schools. And those four other cases that you said that resulted from that, it was along a similar vein?
Yes, after Edgewood was decided, there were some reforms, but the way the system is structured, even though we do have wealthier school districts contributing into the state system and then some of that money being distributed back, the system still has a lot of inequity in it, and so we've had subsequent lawsuits that we've litigated to try to equalize the system as time has passed. There's still a lot of work to be done in that area, but we continue to press that issue.
That's Nina Perales, Vice President of Litigation for the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. MALDEF is celebrating the 50th anniversary of its founding this year. When we come back,
we've worked for decades to make sure that Latino kids have equal opportunity to education, for example, regardless of immigration status.
We continue our conversation with Nina Perales, and a play tells the story of Mexican-American veterans of the Vietnam War. That's next on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Welcome back to Fronteras. The Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund litigates cases relating to the civil rights of Latinos, including voting rights and rights to a quality education. Nina Perales is Vice President of Litigation for MALDEF. She says the nonprofit has tackled a lot of cases relating to immigration in its 50-year history.
Well, in the area of immigration, we've worked for decades to make sure that Latino kids have equal opportunity to education, for example, regardless of immigration status. We won a case in the U.S. Supreme Court in 1982, known as Plyler versus Doe, which guarantees that every child who lives in a school district can register and go to school K through 12, whether or not that child has immigration status or is undocumented. So we built over the years on the strong body of cases that we've worked on in the area of immigration civil rights. And currently, one of the big topics facing the nation really is what to do with those young people who are known as dreamers, young undocumented people who were brought to the United States when they were children and who don't know any other country and who have made incredible contributions to the U.S. through their work and their educational achievement. As you know, there was a program to give temporary reprieve to dreamers known as DACA. That was an initiative under the Obama administration. And in the new administration, we have an effort to phase DACA out. There have been cases around the country dealing with DACA and whether it should continue. And one of those cases is here in Texas, brought by Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, to try to get a court order halting DACA. And MALDEF represents 22 amazing young individuals who are DACA recipients and dreamers in countering that case and being in that case to argue that DACA should continue.
So can you tell me maybe some of the intricacies of that particular case and maybe a little bit more about these DACA recipients who are the defendants?
In the DACA case that's going on in Texas, we have, of course, the state of Texas, which is seeking a court order to halt DACA. We have the Trump administration, which is also involved in this case and has not sought to defend DACA. In fact, the Trump administration has taken the position in this case that DACA is illegal and should be ended. And so because there wasn't anybody in the case who was defending DACA, our 22 clients who are DACA recipients came into the case and the judge allowed them to participate to defend DACA. We have clients who are DACA recipients from coast to coast, from Washington State in the west all the way to a student at Harvard in the east. And our first named client is Carla Perez. She is a recent graduate of the University of Houston Law School. She went to college and went to law school here in Texas and is a proud Texan and is waiting on her bar results right now. She took the bar over the summer, and she already has a fellowship to work on behalf of immigrant women who have experienced violence. She's just one of many, many, many young people in the country who are able to work and live and get up every day and contribute as a result of DACA.
And going back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago, these are the same young adults who, as children, were able to take advantage of the fact that any young child, regardless of immigrant status, could attend a public school.
Dreamers who are brought here when they're babies, infants, or young children do have the opportunity to go to public K through 12 school because of our earlier victory in the Supreme Court in the Plyler versus Doe case. We were very active in seeking legislation, which happily passed in Texas, that allows undocumented individuals who are able to obtain admission to state universities to pay in-state tuition if they graduated from a Texas high school. And so through a combination of legal victories and legislation here in Texas, a young undocumented person is able to get an education. But where DACA comes in and is really important is that it allows somebody to live temporarily in the United States without the fear of deportation, and also allows the individual to work. And that's tremendously important as our young dreamers graduate either from high school or from college and are looking to make a life, to contribute through their work, and need to be able to work lawfully.
In the time that you have been in MALDEF, what kind of changes have you seen within the organization? Because MALDEF now, it seems to be a much more recognizable name than it was 22 years ago.
One of the things that I've noticed over time is that we've been able to expand our capacity. MALDEF is somewhat different from other legal civil rights organizations because we work through regional offices. We're not just located at our headquarters, which are currently in Los Angeles, but we have regional offices in Chicago, San Antonio, Washington, D.C., and also in Northern California. And being regionally based and being able to expand our offices through regions means that we have a much better connection to what's going on at the grassroots and a much better understanding of how we should prioritize our work. However, a lot has remained the same. We're very, very lucky that some of the very best and brightest lawyers coming out of law school today look to MALDEF as an opportunity to contribute and to do great work.
So the time that you've been with MALDEF, has there been a particular case that has resounded with you particularly?
Yes. When I first came to MALDEF as a staff attorney, I was assigned to our political access program, which is voting rights. And one of the great things about having been at MALDEF for 22 years is being able to see how our voting rights work has developed and how we've been able to expand opportunities for Latino voters, not just in Texas, but particularly in Texas. Before I came, early on in MALDEF's history, we won a case in the U.S. Supreme Court called White versus Register, which really brought redistricting into the forefront and how fairly or unfairly election districts were drawn for Latino voters, for Mexican-American voters in Texas. And then as an attorney here at MALDEF, I was able to bring a case to the U.S. Supreme Court about whether congressional lines in Texas were fairly drawn for Latino voters. And we won. And as a result, lines were drawn more fairly for voting. And then again in 2018, we won another victory involving redistricting discrimination against Latino voters. So I've been able to see over time the progress of our work in expanding electoral opportunity for Latino voters and the progress that Latino voters have made in Texas in terms of registration and turnout and being able to go to the polls without harassment and cast a ballot that's going to be fairly counted.
So if you were to cast your net into the future, do you see that there will still be a need for MALDEF in the next 50 years?
Well, MALDEF has evolved to continue to work at the front edge of removing barriers for Latinos. We don't typically do school desegregation cases anymore, although our most recent one was in 2006, so there is still a need to do school desegregation work. But as some of those first-generation barriers are removed, we see second-generation barriers. For example, school finance and how schools are funded can have a very important and strong impact on whether students are learning, and we still work in that area. It may be that Latino voters are permitted to register to vote, but if you have a discriminatory voter ID law, that's something that also has to be addressed. And so as MALDEF evolves into the future, perhaps we will continue to work on second generation issues and maybe even third generation issues as they arise.
That's Nina Perales, President of Litigation for MALDEF. MALDEF is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. No one knows how many Latinos served in the Vietnam War because the Pentagon didn't count them. But a new play that recently debuted in Los Angeles is telling the stories of some of them, the Mexican Americans who fought in the U.S. military. Libby Denkman reports.
This is for real.
During a rehearsal for Ring of Red, a Barrio story, actors run through a scene where young troops take incoming fire for the first time in the jungles of Vietnam.
Then I hear my soldiers crying out in pain.
The play is part of a years-long effort by Tomas Summers Sandoval, who teaches history and Chicano Latino studies at Pomona College. Sandoval and his students recorded more than 50 oral histories from Chicano Vietnam War veterans. Actors translate the vets' experiences into what he calls a testimonial-style play.
We follow their lives through their own storytelling from beginning to end, from childhood into basic training or boot camp and into Vietnam, and then the struggles that they experienced when they came back home.
During Vietnam, the military didn't track troops' ethnicity, so there's no way to know for sure how many Chicanos went to war. Sandoval says they're often overlooked in both the official record and popular culture that shapes our understanding of Vietnam.
And so in just a demographic way, it's sort of a hidden history.
The best estimate is that Mexican Americans made up an outsized number of casualties in Vietnam, close to double their share of the American population. The play brings the community's stories to life.
I went home before I left. My great-grandmother was still alive and living with my family, and she gave me a bendición. And she leaned into me and said, "Que la fuerza de los antepasados esté contigo." May the strength of your ancestors be with you.
Anytime that I can take people's stories and put them in front of folks without this voice of a professor telling them what it all means, that's a good thing.
The title, Ring of Red, refers to a clay ring that lingered in the bathtub of one Chicano soldier after he returned from Vietnam, a residue from the war that he couldn't wash off. Veterans inspired the play, and they're also part of the cast. Marine Corps veteran Diana Shield, whose parents are from Guatemala and Mexico, plays the wife of a Vietnam vet.
I think we need to be telling our stories because we're patriotic, too. That's why my mom and my dad came here, you know?
Within the play, Sandoval wants to make clear Chicanos didn't have one unified Vietnam experience. The characters are conflicted about the war. They often end up enlisting out of patriotism or a lack of economic opportunity. Some are simply drafted. That was the case with Tomas Sandoval Sr., Professor Sandoval's father.
Me, I was a combat infantryman. Yeah, so I was fighting the enemy, so to speak.
Sandoval deployed to Vietnam, arrived at his post, and promptly got assigned kitchen duty. That's where he met a mess sergeant named Chavez and found a piece of the community he'd left at home in Los Angeles.
And the first thing he asked me was, "Where are you from, Sandoval?" "Los Angeles." And he says, "Oh," he says, "do you know Snappy Martinez? Now, come on. There's got to be, what, 3-4 million people in Los Angeles? But I knew him."
The elder Sandoval is the only veteran who both contributed an oral history to the project and joined the cast, though a fellow actor delivers his story.
"And here I am, thousands of miles away, and this guy asked me if I know Snappy. I say, yeah, we named him that."
Professor Sandoval has been working on his oral history project for 7 years, but he says today's political context makes the work all the more relevant.
You don't have to look very hard to see the way that Latinos in general are vilified inside of a lot of our popular discourse, and these kinds of stories are great reminders of how integrated we've been in this country's history.
Sandoval is continuing to collect oral histories from Mexican Americans who served in Vietnam, and he's writing a book on the subject. In Los Angeles, I'm Libby Denkman.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.